Welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast, presented by the National Federation of the Blind, the transformative membership and advocacy organization of blind Americans. Live the life you want.
All right. Welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast. This is your host, Anil Lewis, and I am solo today. So we will see how this goes. Either I will show up on the next episode with Melissa, or I will be replaced with someone else. You guys, our loyal listeners, will decide. In, I guess, recognition of April Fool's Day, we decided to do something purely entertaining. Well, won't be purely, because we always sneak in something that's a little bit more meaningful. But we're going to do it on comedy and humor. And we are blessed to have two extremely talented individuals here with us. So I'm going to bring them right on, since Melissa and I can't go back and forth. So our first comedian that I like to introduce, I met her when I was judging a virtual talent show. And this young lady stole the show. Yvonne Newbert, welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
Well, thank you. This is like great.
Listen to her. She's trying to be all demure, my little Southern Belle here, but I'm sure we'll bring her out of her shell. And the other guest that we have on today's episode is another talented comedian by the name of Mr. Shannon Canton. Hey, Shannon.
What's up? I don't know what demure means, but I'll get there.
It's a Southern thing.
Yeah. You being demure would be a stretch. Yeah. That would also scare me if you were being demure. So it is April, the month of April Fools. Not saying that you guys are April Fools, but we do appreciate the comic talent that you bring to the table and looking forward to having a discussion with you around humor as it relates to blindness, believe it or not. So before we really, really get started, I'd love to know what your favorite, if you have an April Fool's joke, hit me with it. And if you have one that you just know from someone else, please share it with our listeners. Yvonne, why don't we start with you?
Okay, I'll start. Back in the long ago, one of the Memphis radio stations had this little comedy gag that they would do, and people would call in and let, you know, the host know certain things about people. And we did that for April Fool's, because this guy in Memphis had some pet piranha, and he dropped them in the Mississippi River and made the mistake of telling about it. So we got the radio station to call him and pretend that they were wildlife or conservation people or something like that. I don't remember. And they told him, "We heard that you had dropped off and dumped X amount of piranha in the Mississippi River. And now," and he named some big, enormous number of fish have died, and several children had gotten bitten really bad by the piranha that he dropped in.
Oh, my.
And the guy was just all apologetic, and he knew he was either going to jail or going to be fined or anything. And they played it for like 3 minutes or more, and you could tell the man was just about ready to cry.
Did he really put piranha in the Mississippi?
Yes, he really did it. And look, you could do something stupid like that. Don't tell your friends, because your friends are your friends until they can create some comic relief off of you.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's my favorite, funniest one that happened.
All right. Well, just to get my head around it, though, no fish or children died.
No. You know? Okay. Not really. Maybe.
Thank you.
No. Hopefully.
Okay. All right. I'm going to wrestle with that one a little bit. Shannon, what do you have?
I'm probably going to get bleeped up for this, but
okay, hold on. Let me enable my 5 second delay.
Yeah, please. I'd say April Fool's pranks are like a white people thing. I grew up, we weren't wacky like that, man. You had to watch out for your drink year around. I think that's.
Yeah, but come on now. I know you had to play some practical jokes on somebody, or you got practical joked.
Man, people take it too far. I've had like my stuff burned before.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, that's not a joke.
Oh yeah, no, football, they'd put icy hot in our pet. Like there was, oh, it was, yeah, wow. that's yeah. what I mean. Like yeah. we took it.
April Fools.
yeah. Yeah, there was yeah. no gotcha, no wacky yeah. LOLs. It was.
Oh, yeah, that's man. Urgent care right there. Yeah, was, oh my goodness. All yeah, right. Well, I think that's setting an interesting tone for the rest of this podcast. I always appreciate way back in the day on April Fools, we released a video. The National Federation of the Blind released a video that kind of played with all of the misconceptions around blindness.
Yeah,
yeah, and I love that video. It was like, you know, blind guys were treating the sighted people the way, you know, they treat us. We had yeah. a young blind lady. She was dragging one of the sighted people across the street and you know, all that stuff. So I love that. I hope we can dig that out of the archives and use that. But that's one of my favorite April Fool's experiences. And, you know, it's nice to have all these different jokes. And we'll talk a little bit more in the podcast around how jokes can actually be healing and therapy. But speaking of jokes, I tell you what's not a joke is dealing with the horrendous bunch of emails. So I want to share with you guys, if you're like most people I know, your email box is out of control. Hundreds of messages, maybe even thousands. And every time you try to deal with it, you're either fighting with your screen reader or handing your phone to someone else. Just to find one email. So Lumen is built differently. It's a voice first personal AI. No screen, no swipes, no scrolling. You just talk. Ask it what's in your inbox. Tell it to reply. Ask what needs your attention today. And Lumen handles everything. In natural conversation, the way you navigate the world. For people who live and work without a screen, not adapted, not retrofitted, just built that way from day one. Lumen is an early access now. If you want to try it, they'll do a free one-on-one onboarding call to get you set up. Just go to lumen.email. That's lumin.email. Lumen email. Now, back to the jokes. All right. Well, that was my first attempt at reading an ad. Obviously, I need practice.
No. Next time, you should ask Lumen to read it for you.
Hey, that's a great idea. But I'm going to have to check that Lumen out. That sounds pretty interesting to me. All right. To all of our listeners at the Nation of Blind podcast, we have some experts in humor here on our show. And in recognition of April Fool's Day, we thought that this would be a good break for us to have a little fun. So we want to talk to Yvonne. And Yvonne, tell our listeners a little bit about who you are. I know you perform stand-up comedy and you've done storytelling off and on, but maybe 25 years, I think.
I've been an entertainer all of my life.
And you're only 25 years old, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it. Okay. And I spent several years in the 90s singing. I was old and grown by then.
Singing, really? What type of music? What genre?
Blues and country.
Nice. Do you play an instrument too? Or just the
I
voice?
Used to play guitar.
Oh, wonderful. I didn't know that.
And piano and saxophone and
Look
clarinet.
At you.
And keyboard. I've always been an entertainer. And yes, I was a class clown. And I went to the Tennessee School for the Blind, which made being a class clown really easy and a lot of fun. And I was tiny little thing. And I used my words and my language to get over on people who were bigger than me and bullies. So humor was my go-to. And I used it mostly well. And I was always bound and determined in any situation I was going to have the last word. And it got me in a lot of trouble, but John Lewis said it best, go out, you know, good trouble.
Get good trouble. That's my man.
Good
that's
trouble.
Right. Necessary trouble. Yes.
Necessary.
Yeah.
Good trouble.
So you use humor to get out of trouble and into trouble.
Yes.
Okay.
And
okay.
I've always been a leader. I hold several like leadership positions in the NFB, and my humor and quick wit has helped me in that. And that's what got me to being a leader in the first place, because I found out at an early age, humor can get you places that meanness or nastiness couldn't get you. and you could get one over, like I said, on the bullies. And I had a pretty messed up life. So humor was my salvation, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Interesting. So humor, you used it to defend yourself. But I also see here you have an alternative way of defending yourself. One of your hobbies is axe throwing.
Oh, yeah. I started out.
She says, oh, yeah.
I started out shooting guns.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had to take it a step back.
Yeah. Okay. When I was little, my mama would watch her stories or soap operas, and I would nap on the couch. And there was this couple on one of these stories called Russ and Rachel. I don't remember if it was Another World or As the World Turns.
Okay.
But they were always fighting about something. And on one of the days, she threw a plate across the kitchen at him. And I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. I'm
oh, my
six,
goodness.
And this is great. So that got me into
thinking
accuracy.
About axes.
Yes, it did. It got me into accuracy sports.
And oh, accuracy sports.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Got it.
And so, you know, I grew up in the South. So, you know, all my family hunted. So I grew up around guns and I started shooting when I was like probably about 11.
Mm.
And I guess only being able to see out of one eye actually helped with my aim.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause a lot of people, they'll close that one eye.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And later in life, I ended up getting nerve damage in my arm, so I really couldn't shoot anymore. So I met a guy at a meeting, and he had just started Tennessee's first axe throwing studio. So we went to the studio so he could teach me how to throw an axe. And it was the greatest thing ever. Wonderful therapy.
Axe throwing studio. So you're in a building.
Yes.
And it's like lanes, like a bowling alley?
Yes. It actually is like lanes, like a bowling alley.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. I'm not going to make the whole episode about this, but I'm just curious. Can anyone just go in there? Do you have to have some type of pre-training? Are you in a room?
Oh,
with
anyone can go in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you're
they
a brave
serve
woman.
Alcohol.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So we have another guest.
Thank you, Lizzie Borden.
You are a brave woman.
Well, no, the guy standing at the board, tapping the board with my cane so I would know where to throw, that's a brave man.
No!
But there's rules. There's rules.
You can't maim someone?
Yes.
Someone standing at the target tapping
yes.
it.
Yes.
No,
and he
see,
would tap
see,
it.
No, here.
And then he
let
would
me,
come back.
Let me help him. Get you some air tags or a tile or something, and you hang that on the target and you let someone press a button from where you are.
Okay, yeah, but I did that when I was shooting. I was at a firing range and I got the bright idea to put a beeper behind the target.
Yeah.
And I shot it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That feels like similar to if someone's tapping it.
Yeah. With the axe, you just want to have a little bit more of a dangerous potential outcome.
Yeah. No. If you,
yes.
if you, the louder the scream, the better the aim. That's
yes.
The way
exactly.
I
exactly.
You guys.
You know you hit your target if you go and you go bullseye. I actually got a
sorry,
bullseye.
Gus.
My first.
Okay.
He,
not,
we worked
not,
for like
not
30
an audible
minutes.
Bullseye, though. You didn't actually hit anyone.
No, I didn't hit nobody yet. But it
oh
is. It's
goodness.
It's great therapy.
Shannon, save me. Save me,
no,
Shannon.
No, don't save him, Shannon.
No. She got an axe, dude. You alone.
This is on Zoom. This is on Zoom. You're fine. So we have another guest, Shannon Canton. Shannon, tell us a little bit about you.
Do you throw things?
I hear you're an actor, a writer.
I've done acting. I've done writing. I would just call myself a comedian now.
Okay.
Yeah. Born and raised in Hawaii. Live in Boston now. Hit most of the circuit. Been through, I'd say I've performed in 20 states now. Live in Boston, but got my podcast out in Philly. Perform mostly out in Philly, but East Coast shows me love. So I've been out here for a bit.
Interesting. So you don't have any interesting hobbies?
I don't know if there's anything I can do to beat what she just said.
Oh, this is not a competition. Come
Oh
on,
no,
man.
yeah,
This is therapy. This is like full disclosure. Just let it go. Just
all
let it
right.
go.
So it all started when I was 5 years old.
Uh-oh.
I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu now. I've always loved sports from high school. I played football, did track, did wrestling, doing some martial arts. Stand-up comedy has been a big part of my life. Anytime I get to write, I'm out here doing it. I'm working out bits, trying to get better every day.
Nice.
Comedy's rough, but it's also real fun when you can finally work out that joke, when you flesh out that bit where there's something funny and you finally break it down to the point where people can understand where you're trying to go with it. It's probably better than having a child, I'd say.
Oh,
I have
well.
no kids. I have no kids.
Okay. All right. I was about to say, I don't know. I count that as one of my most
Grace,
wonderful
Joe.
accomplishments. So I know I listened to one of your, I think it was a TED Talk when you were talking about was it your brother
Oh yeah,
saying,
starts on the
was it beat
stage. Yeah,
baseball or goal ball or
beat baseball. My brother and I, we started out in Boston. My brother was never an athlete, so they wanted me to talk about something. But as weird as it sounds, even though I love stand up, I'm terrible at talking about myself. Anytime someone's like, "Tell me about you," oh, Yvonne called me earlier. I could not. She's like, "Who are you?" I'm like, "I don't know." Like
He's
comedy,
still
yeah,
trying to find himself.
exactly. There's an out of body experience where I'm like, I can channel whatever I want, but they wanted me to talk about myself and my story. But the most important thing about me is my family. And I remember my brother, who, even though I grew up in a family of six, three of us were blind, he may have been the least athletic of the three blind ones. And we all had different experiences, but when he finally got opportunities, when he was in college, when we started doing beat baseball, it really showed how much of an athlete he was. He's a high-level climber now. He's jacked.
Wow.
He's, yeah. So it really was one of the coolest things to be like, this guy used to be a nerd.
I just loved hearing you tell the story because it really was powerful and you did share on a really emotional level, but you still interjected that humor in your presentation, which I think is pretty cool. You both are really wonderful storytellers. And I know that when I was serving as a judge for the talent show, a lot of the jokes that Yvonne shared were stories, just like the piranha one she shared earlier. So I love the way that you guys are able to interject that. And I want to drill down with that a little bit more, but let's just take a quick minute for a message.
The fastest way to waste your ADA Title II budget is to start remediating documents before you understand what is actually in your archive. Across the country, agencies are sitting on millions of pages, scanned files, and old PDFs no one has looked at in years. The real problem is not remediation. The real problem is not knowing what you have. That is why Numa Solutions is offering a free archive readiness assessment. We analyze your backlog, create a Title II triage plan, and remediate a representative 1,000-page sample from your own documents so you can see real results on real files. Email remediation at numasolutions.com. That's remediation at PNEUMASolutions.com with the subject line Archive Readiness Assessment to get started.
All right. Glad I didn't have to read that one. So, let's talk a little bit more, get a little deeper with this whole comedy thing. How did you guys get started in comedy?
A breakup.
Really? Are you serious?
That serious. I was like, I had a breakup. I'm not really a big like relationship guy, but that one hit me. And so I knew, I was like, if I bomb, it won't be as bad as this right now. So I found a mic, and I made a deal with God. I said, God, if I do well tonight, I'm doing this. I've always loved comedy, was a big comedy fan probably since like sixth, seventh grade. My dad hated comedy. He never understood it. He's very immigrant mindset. So he's like, what is this dumb thing? No, ha ha ha. He's like, I can do that. But I remember loving it so much. And then I finally did back in 2018. That was when I finally made that deal to myself. And I did well. And I bombed the next 9 months. But I got the taste.
that one thrill, yeah, where you killed that first time sustained you, huh?
Yeah, what okay. It could be. I saw the what if.
Wow. Yvonne, what about you?
I was fortunate. I grew up knowing people from the Grand Ole Opry. And there was a comedy duo, Lonzo and Oscar. And so I'm like dinosaur. Well, not quite dinosaur old, but old enough that I watched the show Hee Haw.
Oh, I love Hee Haw.
And thought it was just hilarious.
We're not ones to go around spreading rumors. I love Hee Haw.
My favorite one from Hee Haw is, nice. Let's see, how'd it go? She took out her glass eye, her wig, and her false teeth. She took the wig makeup right off of her face. I'd love to love and kiss on you, darling, but you were scattered all over the place.
Wow.
Sing it with her.
So I grew up with country comedy. And then I found Richard Pryor. And then it was on.
Yeah. That,
legend.
That's Grand Ole Opry quality right there.
And my uncle, everybody's got one of those uncles. And he introduced me to Red Fox, not Fred Sanford, but Red Fox. And and then it was on again.
And people messed up when they confused the two. They were the same man, but
no, they were
different
not.
Comedy styles. Yeah. When he was Red Fox, it wasn't Fred Sanford. I know a lot of people thought, oh, let's go see Fred Sanford. And they get to a Red Fox show, it's a whole different type of comedy.
So those were my influences from country comedy.
So when did you transition, though, from what you were talking about earlier? You recognized that it was a tool that you could use in school. When did it happen?
Did you
see those artists and say, hey, I could do that?
Well, no, not really. I took a comedy class and got probably the best compliment anybody would ever get from a, known comedian. And it was, he asked if anybody wanted to tell a story. It was comedy and storytelling. And I popped up, of course, unlike our friend here. I don't mind talking about myself. There's a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, ladies and gentlemen, this here is what you call a natural.
Oh, nice.
So I was given a God-given gift of comedy. Might have went a little stray a little bit with Richard Pryor. My best friend, her daddy was like really big in the Assembly of God Church. Southeast, and just wonderful. Love that man. And so I was walking across the campus at the blind school one day, and I was going over a Richard Pryor routine, four letter words and all. And somebody walked up behind me, kind of put his hand on my shoulder, and
I was in
the zone. And he said, young lady, you need to watch your language. And I'm like, oh, no, it's fine. I got this memorized. It's perfect. And I turned around, and there was Brother Gene, big as life. And, oh, I think I turned every shade of red a white girl could turn.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, oh, Brother Gene.
Well, if you don't have moments like that in your life, you're not really living, right?
But he just hugged me up, and he didn't yell at me or holler at me or anything. Like I said, great, great man.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me, this is the Nation of Blind podcast. How did your blindness impact your comedy journey?
I got this firm belief that maybe sighted people were put on the earth for our amusement. Because it just worked. It's just worked out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always, like I said, used humor. Because we, a lot of blind people say, well, the big question, well, how much can you see? Just enough to be dangerous.
Yeah. There you go.
So that's a quick little comic way of doing it. But one of my favorites that I did get to use, not my humor, but their whatever it's called, I called the furniture store one day to see about getting a sleeper sofa. And I asked him, I was like, do y'all have sleeper sofas? And he said, well, yes, ma'am, we do. We got sleeper sofas all the way from $250 up to $1,000 or more. And I'm like, great, I need one. I said, you know, since COVID's happening and all, I need to ask you this. I'm blind and I'm going to need to, you know, feel of the furniture to let you know. I mean, let me know, you know, what I'm looking at. He said, oh, that ain't going to be no problem. He said, we'll just clean it up when you leave. That's fine. He said, but there's one problem. I'm like, what? And I thought he's going to say, well, you have to wear a mask or something like that. No. He said, well, we don't have any wheelchairs.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And I was like, the only thing out of my mouth in a crowded room was, bless your heart. I mean, that is just popped out. They
spoken like a true
and,
Southern
and
Belle.
I'm like,
that's right.
Well, if you remember, I don't need a wheelchair. I need a sleeper sofa. And it just went right.
Did
no.
he get it?
See, that's the bad thing. A lot of times they don't get it.
Oh, yes, this is true.
I was arrested one time and the police asked me, did I know anything about anything? And I'm like, no, sir, I can honestly tell you I didn't see a thing. And it went right over his head. And I was shocked.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. What about you, Shannon? Has blindness been a positive, negative, help, a hindrance?
I think it's neutral. I don't think it's really made a change. I will say my comedy journey was a little different. I was the bully, so I've, you know,
I get that. Yeah, been, I can see that. Yeah.
I think my blindness probably took that back a little, but every now and then it rears its ugly head. But I think we all talk about our lived experience, so blindness will pop up every now and again. The same way me talking about being from Hawaii, being Filipino, being Hawaiian, being part of a family of six. I think there are funny things about blindness that exist in the world that I will say some people who are blind may not find funny because we all experience things differently. I will just throw on to a little thing that happened while I was in Hawaii. I did a really big show with my buddy who's a touring national headliner and a couple of my friends from the, you know, blindness community came along and couple very much didn't like one of the jokes he riffed off of that happened with me and him. And I loved it. And some did, some did not. And I'm not the type of person to question their experience, especially I think in the world of blindness, they've been in it longer than I have. They fought more battles. They've had tougher experiences. However, in my experience, you look at the heart, right? You see where the joke comes from with the blindness. Are you laughing with the person? Are you laughing at the person?
That's and a good point.
In comedy, sometimes there's people who go for the joke, right? The punch should be the most important part. But I will say sometimes people go for the reaction and you're not going to be as successful. I'll say with knowing his heart, I thought it was great. But ultimately, every time somebody has a feeling, I let them feel what they feel.
That's right.
But
that's right.
You can never tell somebody what they meant by their joke.
And that's a life lesson. That's not even just comedy. That's just real for life. I know that I went to see a Trevor Noah show once, and you know the guys that come up to warm up the audience, right? So you're ready to laugh, and you know he's picking people out in the audience, and he picked me. And I had my blind driver challenge hat on. He's like, what's that hat on your head? I said, it's the blind driver challenge hat. He's like, you're blind? I'm like, yeah. And I forget what joke he told, but to me it was funny, but the crowd went quiet.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's... and he said, would you please let them know it's okay to laugh? I had to give the whole audience permission, right? Because they all had turned themselves into my advocates, I guess, that, no, don't laugh at the blind man. But if it's funny, it's funny. You know, I'm the blind jokes. I don't know how you guys feel about blind jokes.
Yeah, no, funny. I'll say the Chappelle's, the blind white supremacy.
Clarence Bixby. Oh, my goodness.
It's brilliant.
That made me so uncomfortable. It was so funny. Oh my goodness.
It's so uncomfortable but funny because of its absurdity, right? You understand that this is not going to happen. But also, you know, throughout the joke, they built how smart he was, right? He wrote 4 books. He got all these degrees. So the blindness was really ultimately the smallest part of it, but it really was hilarious.
It was masterful. So many dimensions to that skit. So many dimensions.
Yeah.
What were you about to say, Yvonne?
Oh, about blind people and comedy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And blind
I've
jokes.
Had to give audiences the okay to laugh at things.
Yeah.
An example, to get over my depression after I'd lost all of my sight. My friends got really worried about me and finally talked me into going to a costume party. And this was spur of the moment. And if you've ever had to put together a really good Halloween costume, it takes time and effort and thought. And I didn't have time for all that.
Oh, you're serious.
So I went as the third blind mouse. You know, all I needed, gray tracksuit, a piece of wire hanger made into
the third one.
Why the third one? Just the number 3 is so cute in print. It's all like swirly and everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And, you know, the third blind mouse. That just sounds better than the second blind mouse or the first blind mouse. The third blind mouse just flows better. So here we go to the party. And I've not used a cane. I didn't really need one. I didn't think at the point in time. And so I just walked up hand in hand, or we had our arms around each other, probably, my friend Gary. And so everybody was walking up to the stage for the costume thing. And the judge got to me and he's like, ma'am, I'm afraid you might offend somebody. And so, of course, we all just broke up. And they're like, she ain't going to offend nobody. She's the blind man. She's the real deal. And I ended up winning the contest. Of course you did.
But I just to make sure I offer this disclaimer, blind jokes are fine if they're funny. I don't like blind jokes that aren't funny. Every blind joke is not funny. And some of them are just stupid. But if it's funny, it's fun.
That's the toughest thing about being blind in comedy is there's a lot of jokes that you have to call out for being hack. And I'm like, I've heard this a million times. Like, don't give me that side. Oh, you know, why you blind people can't go skydiving. Like, no, I don't want to hear this. Like, and I'm not offended. It's just bad, just regular bad. And that's part of, I think, the educating, right? I will talk about my blindness because it's my lived experience. There's been hilarious moments. I have a joke where I compare being Filipino versus being blind, right? Like, I grew up in a household where we didn't turn lights on. So you might come to my house and there's no lights. And I'm like, no, don't blame blindness on that. That's part of the experience, right? It's like to educate through humor. And it's really important in that way. But I also don't think when you're trying to make somebody laugh, education is necessarily the most important thing, right? Laughter is.
Right. But you do see, because that was one of the things I wanted to know, do you guys see jokes and humor as a way to perform public education, or do kind of systems change your perceptions, like creating kind of some type of social change, getting people's public perception around blindness to be altered?
I'd say the side stuff, like that, I call it the hang, right? Afterwards, what happens on stage, if people consider me a wordsmith, they can, you know, rock with me.
Mm-hmm.
They know what I'm saying on stage is a joke. That's the point. So when they come off and they say, when I tell them what I've done, my advocacy efforts, talking about blindness in general, what blind people can do, it's a lot easier than if I just straight up went up to people and was like, hey, blind people can do this. They believe what blind people can do because they've seen what I've done on stage.
Mm-hmm. Is that similar for you too, Yvonne? Do you tell a blind the story, or do you let your stories represent blindness because you're a blind person telling those stories?
My stories usually end up representing blindness, and I usually try to focus on my wins, the things I've won, the positive change I've made, and how I've made that positive change.
Oh, celebrations.
And sometimes if I'm talking to newly blind people, I will tell some of the funny, messed up things that have happened, because sometimes seeing what you've done kind of helps them with their journey. They're like, oh, so what? I put salt in the frosted flakes. Mm-hmm. You know, things can and do happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. My first husband didn't follow the rules of, you know, the golden rule, do not move our stuff. Well, he did. And it was not Ovaltine in my 5-year-old's milk.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. She still, to this day, has trust issues with me.
Well, that keeps him on his guard. Yes. It keeps him alert. That's good. I think that, I like comedy like I like music. I like all kinds of music, and I like all kinds of comedy. I mean, all the way back to, what's the guy, the two, Ollie and Stanley, Costello, Abbott and Costello, you know, those types of things with the real kind of slapstick, kind of, you know, the straight man, all that, all the way to the social change people like the Lenny Bruces of the world. And you mentioned Richard Pryor and, you know, what's the gentleman's name? Ralphie May, may he rest in peace, along with Richard Pryor and Lenny Bruce. All of them use their comedy in a way to really create some, I think in a real way, a paradigm shift of thought around race and socioeconomics and the whole deal. And I just love being able to get people to laugh. I think that if we were able to do that more and more today, I think people would be in a better place, because I think laughter is therapy. And I do appreciate you guys for what you do. Tell me a joke.
I'm a story person. So you go.
Okay.
Oh, I'm a dirty boy.
You want me to tell a joke?
Oh, yeah, you go. I put it back on you. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead, funny man. Why don't you dance?
I went to Shannon invited me to come talk to him with group that he hung out. They do this late night show comedy thing, virtual comedy thing. I should have done my research. But we were talking, I think it was around Black History, and I was going to go talk about the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment and that kind of thing. And I got in early, and don't apologize, man. I just wasn't ready.
He learned.
Yes, I did. And, you know, like I said, luckily I love all kinds of humor. Because that was an awakening. I think that's what endeared you to me, too, though, because I like people that are willing to express things. And unfortunately, well, I won't say unfortunately, fortunately, we have people that have the ability to create humor in these variety of different styles, because there's a lot of people, you know, Abbott Costello's not going to do it for them, you know? And there's a lot of people, of course, that as you were saying, Yvonne, you know, Richard Pryor's going to take a little bit too far. But I still think that these were tremendous comedians because they played to an audience that their stories and their situations resonated with them. And I think that as blind people, you being in this industry really helps us, you know, in our mission as the National Federation of the Blind, to really show society that we're truly a subset of society. And we can laugh at ourselves. We can laugh at society in general. We can use laughter as therapy, just like everybody else. And I really appreciate you guys for this as a chosen profession. But let me ask, you know, as we're talking about this, is there a point where you think jokes go too far?
Oh, yeah. That depends on you. And that also depends on your...
So what about blindness specifically? Do you think that there's a time when the jokes are too offensive for blind people?
No.
I've heard some like stupid lame ones, you know, about the dog and the parachuting and all of that, but yeah, not anything too offensive. My thing is, don't intentionally hurt someone. Don't intentionally set up to degrade any single person or any group of people. You don't do that intentionally. So that's my line. That's the line I do not cross. Not intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you in saying it, I'm hearing you say sometimes you've said something that wasn't intended to harm. It may have created some harm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we all have the goal coming in trying to make people laugh. And sometimes it doesn't work. Often it doesn't work. Way too often it doesn't work. But I don't think I've ever been mad at what somebody said. I've been in roast battles, and there's times like probably the most hurtful things people have ever said to me in a roast battle had nothing to do with my blindness. They looked within me, and I think that's how many of us feel. But some people, maybe blindness hit them a little different because, like, the comedy world usually and the world in general, right? Whether it's literature, whether it's comedy, whether it's walking down the street, the expectations for blindness is low. So we're usually the butt of the jokes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think there's a certain paradigm shift that is coming, right? Where more people, especially with social media, where people can see what blind people are doing, where the National Federation of the Blind has been one of the biggest like groups that have shown what we can do. But in the world of comedy, we can now laugh at ourselves because I think we've gone far enough in the world of work, the world of academia. I think that's where you're allowed to start making more jokes, right? When people start getting more opportunities, and the fight's not done. So I think if people came up with the heart of, oh man, Shannon is going to kill himself if he cut scissors, and he meant that, I would be stupid. It wouldn't be, but I would take that more offensive than someone coming up to me and saying, man, what an idiot, he did this.
Yeah, your capacity. Yeah. And yeah, I get that. Yeah.
A lot of times people don't get what your point is. I like was in college and walking to the cafeteria, and this girl came up and she's like, can I ask you a question? I'm like, yeah, you know, always ready to oblige an interested public. And I just woke up from biology class, and she was like, how do you eat? And then I woke up. Yeah, I woke up real quick, and I told her,
that's hilarious.
I said, when I go to the cafeteria, I walk through the line, and I tell them what I want. I want a hamburger. I want some pizza. The chicken dumplings, they look good today. Yeah, that chocolate cake and that pie and some French fries to top it off. And they take everything I want, and they put it in a blender, and they blend it up, and then they give me one of them big old McDonald's straws to drink it through. Because, you know, as everybody knows, blind people, we can't use forks and spoons. And our Tennessee legislators just thought that they're going to make a law saying you can't give a blind person a sharp object like a knife. And her response was, oh, my God, how can I help? And I told her, I said, well, you go to your political science teacher. I said, you're a freshman, right? And she said, uh-huh. I said, so you go to Joe. And you tell him, if you don't remember my name, just tell him you met the blind woman on the way to the cafeteria. I'm the only one here. He'll know who you're talking about. And I got to class a couple days later. Joe comes in, slams his hands on the table. Yvonne, what have you been up to now?
You didn't let her off the hook. You let her leave thinking that was the truth.
I did not think she was going to do that. I mean, she came off dumb as a box of rocks. How do you eat?
And how many other people did she share that with before she talked this?
I do not.
You're the reason they brought me my lunch in a straw.
Exactly.
Okay, that's...
But his reply, I said, so what did you tell her? And he said, I told her since this was your baby, you're going to go to the library and you're going to get the names, emails, and phone numbers and addresses of all the Tennessee legislators. And he said, and you are getting graded for this.
Oh, my goodness.
Great, great teacher. Oh, he was.
Well, I'm glad you got punished for it. Setting us back the way you did.
I'm just a horrible, horrible.
I got one last question for you guys, and it seems it's the obvious answer to this, but do you find that your humor makes it easier for you to fit in? Because you know how people are just so nervous to be around blind people. Do you think that your sense of humor and being able to get people to laugh and relax helps you form those relationships better?
Yes, I think it does. An example of that, somebody asked James Brown, he's our affiliate president, is Yvonne serious? And it was somebody who didn't know me that well. And he said, oh, serious as a heart attack. That, you know, she has her sense of humor. She has an offset way kind of looking at the world. But it works. I mean, she's our NFB Newsline director. She's our legislative coordinator and serves on our board and does a bang up job at it. And then he followed it up by saying, you need to watch this one and observe how she does things because she's sneaky. Her humor, you will think it's just funny. And then you'll wake up 3 days later at 3 a.m. and like, oh, I get it.
She's made you think about something.
Now.
Yeah. 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 Good for you. What about you, Shannon?
Yes and no. I think
you're always indifferent with your answers. Go ahead.
I'm very. I don't. You know, I don't do things.
Yeah, this is why you had that breakup. You can't commit. Go right ahead.
Stop saying things that are true, man. I don't. I think yes, it's been easier for me, but I think people are uncomfortable. And in a space like comedy, if people don't have the time to work that out with themselves, because I think comedy is right now at its greatest point. There's more comedy to be had. There's more opportunities, more mics, more spaces to do comedy. But I do think some people are a little scared. So the people that I tend to rock with a little more are the people who are a little more upfront. The people who will say some dumb. My boy Ryan, first time I met him in Philly, he's like, what the hell is this? And he grabbed my cane, like almost Gronk spiked it and became one of my best friends. But there are people who truly do care about social justice, but they have a fear of saying the wrong things. And I think that is a tough thing for them as well, because you want to be in the right. But I think sometimes when you're worried about being right, sorry, Alexa, stop. When you're worried about being right, you start to you lose the chance to get to know somebody. So I think, yes, blindness has helped me rock with certain people. But I think sometimes when you want to do the right thing too bad, you lose a chance of getting to know somebody.
Yeah, I get that. That's real. Yeah, so this has been interesting. I could go on forever, but you know, we have to keep these at a reasonable time frame.
And I didn't get to tell my favorite story about John Perret.
Well, you why don't you tell that story and that'll take us out?
I absolutely just love Washington Seminar. And I'm friends with my congressman, Tim Burchett. And well, Tim, he's just about country's cornbread. And he's always coming off with all these hokey things. I told him he needs to rewrite and change his script. And so here we are at Washington Seminar, my first time out as legislative coordinator, waiting on Tim. He couldn't be at the meeting, but he was going to skip out of one committee meeting at the end and come say hi so I could introduce everybody. And so waiting on Tim, and in walks John Perret. And I do get intimidated sometimes, and this time I was, because I thought he was there just to watch and see how I was doing. And so I introduced all my team to him, and then Tim comes in. And like I said, we're friends, and Tim's the old Southern boy, and he like kissed me on my forehead. And I'm like, oh, you kissed me on my boo-boo. Because me and James Brown ended up having matching scars because he bent over without putting his hand out and hit his face on an exercise bike. And I walked too close to a parked car with a piece of plywood sticking out the front window. And so we had matching scars for Washington Seminar. And I told Tim, I said, you just kissed me on my boo-boo. Thank you. It's going to heal now. And so we gave him a Hot Wheels car, and I introduced him to John and everything. And then Tim left, and John was like, you really are like good friends with your congressman. And I'm like, what, John? Does your congressman not kiss you?
There's another story that I could share around John Parade that might explain why he may have had the reaction that he had, but that's for another episode. I really do appreciate you guys sharing with us today. I love having a good laugh. I hope that I'll get a chance to see both of you perform for many, 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 many years to come. And if our listeners have a joke that they like to share, feel free to reach out and share it with us. But until then, remember, you can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.
We'd love your feedback. Email podcast@nfb.org or call 410-659-9314, extension 2444.